Good afternoon, listeners, and welcome to the second edition of XPDID, which is X-Premier Desert Island Discs. My name's Ham Zen, and the guest this week is Jeffro Cadbury. So, away to you, Jed. Can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what your first track will be?
Okay, hi Ham Zen, thanks for the invite. Well, I was born in 1948 in a place called Hackney, that's in London, England, and spent most of my early youth in East and North London. I was actually, in picking this track, I was actually remembering around the age of 5 or 6, where I lived in quite a depressed area of Hackney, and we were quite poor. And I got this chicken pox. I just forgot the name for a second. I got this chicken pox really, really badly, and the whole of my body was covered in itchy pimples. I can remember to this day how it was. And at that time, we were a family of four, but we lived with my aunt and uncle, so it made us a family of six in like a two-bedroom place, and we were all like really coped in. And that song, this song by Doris Day called Que Sera Sera, was at the hit parade at that time. And I also remember my aunt, Auntie Rosie, who would sit with me day and night and sing me that song to chill me out, really, take my mind off the pain. And that she certainly did. So this is in memory of her.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. What will be. When I grew up and fell in love, I asked my sweetheart, what lies ahead? Will we have rainbows day after day? Here's what my sweetheart said. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. What will be. Now I have children of my own. They ask their mother, what will I be? Will I be handsome? Will I be rich? I tell them tenderly. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. What will be. Que sera, sera.
Well, that definitely took me back to the 50s.
Oh, you can remember the 50s, can you?
Yeah, indeed I can. Rather too well. So, I don't know where to take from there. Do you want to go on talking about the next track? Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. I'm not sure I've heard of them.
Okay. Piss taker. yeah, we. After I left Hackney, we eventually moved back to North London, or to North London. And went into my teens. And this really reflects the area, I guess, of my middle to late teens. It was the early 60s. It was Beach Boys music. It was very fluffy time, I would say. Very nice time. Very time. Lots of romances. And everyone seemed to be in love. And this actual song, I mean, I'd never heard of Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons in my life either. I remember walking once into this party just off Hampstead Heath, a girl called Ruth's house, can't remember her second name, and it was just this song was just blasting out, you know, and I just thought, wow, I've just got to find out who these people are. And they ended up being quite, well, in their cult. I've been following them for years. You know, it's one of the few things that survive with me throughout my life. So anyway, this is the first one I ever heard. They've got loads and loads of others, which they regularly re-release. Anyway, it's called Dawn Gerway. Enjoy.
Pretty as a midsummer's morn, they call her Dawn.
Sums up early 60s for me. That's got that Buddy Holly vibe. It's very innocent times. Was this a period when you really first got into music?
Yes, you're right. Buddy Holly did have a Frankie Valli vibe. You got that right on. It was one of the few times I really noticed. Songs very rarely sort of make me jump and totally sort of fill me up. But that was the first one I can just remember so clearly, walking into the room and just hearing it coming out. The then stereo speakers were fantastic. Now, I mean, I had earlier, if you like, awakenings of music. My actual earliest memories of somebody called Paul Robeson singing Negro spirituals.
Remember well.
Yeah, my dad used to play them, and also a lot of Hebrew music and Yiddish music. I tried to find one or two, or at least one I wanted to play, but I couldn't get it here today to the studio, I'm afraid. But no, certainly other music's influenced me, but that's the one I chose to put on. Stay with me most of the time, you know.
And was there a lot of music around your household when you were growing up?
Well, always listened to the radio, things like children's favourites on Saturdays and family favourites on Sundays. I love the music. When record players came out, we did get a record player. And in fact, I remember my first 78. It was by Tommy Steele, called A Handful of Songs. Yes, so there was always music there, right? My dad was mainly into things like Benjamin Gili and classical music, and Chazanut, that sort of Jewish cantorial music. I like pop music. That's far back as I remember.
No, that's good. That gives a good background. Now, the next track, Barbara Lewis, Hello Stranger. Now, I vaguely remember her, but I certainly don't remember the track, and really can hardly remember her voice. So could you give us some background for why that track's important for you, but also maybe a little bit about Barbara Lewis?
Well, actually, I can't tell you very much about Barbara Lewis, because it was really the song that stayed in my memory for so many years. And basically, I suppose it was from my first real girlfriend. So it was the rise of my first real love in my life. And I think this song was in the Hit Parade, but I remember the day we were together and we heard it. We had a party and went all sort of gooey.
As you do.
Yeah. Anyway, this is in memory of, well, not in memory, I'm sure she's alive and well. Her name used to be Jill Lucas. Hope you're doing well, Jill. Never forget.
You know it, Barbara Lewis. Barbara Lewis it is, folks.
Hello, stranger. It seems so good to see you back again. How long has it been?
It seems like a mighty long time.
Seems like a mighty long time. Oh, I'm so glad you stopped by to say hello to me. Remember the way it used to be.
Seems like a mighty long time. Chibop, chibop, my baby, ooh. It seems like a mighty long time. Chibop, chibop, my baby. Chibop, chibop, my baby. Chibop, chibop, my baby. Chibop, chibop, my baby. Chibop, chibop, my baby.
Because I still love you so, although it seems like a mighty long time. Chibop, chibop, my baby, ooh.
It seems like a mighty long time. Chibop, chibop, my baby. Chibop, chibop, my baby. Chibop, chibop, my baby.
I'm so happy
that
you're here with life.
Oh, that's very nice. That early 60s R&B and Tamla stuff. That's a really nice track, Jed. I'm really glad heard that.
I've got some other music from her as well, but that was the one that sort of struck me.
Yeah. No, sorry, God, I was going to go for the music one there. I'm intrigued to know what the rest of the album's like now.
Oh,
similar style?
No, a whole variation.
I mean, right, okay.
That just had a strong romantic association for me.
You know it.
Yeah. Next question?
The next question is, there's a bit of a leap now. I've noticed, I can relate to the journey, like, you're just a couple of years older than me, so a little bit earlier in the 50s through, but that whole route I can relate to, and then there's that big leap to the next track, which...
Okay, yeah, a lot happened in between the leap. It's really hard to fit your whole life in a few records, and
yep.
So I had to do a little bit of editing, and after that Hello Stranger, you know, that was round about, we're talking about 16, 17 age, I went to university, life took a turn, I became very aware of anti-Semitism. It was the time of the Six-Day War in the college I was at, in London University. I couldn't believe it, there was all this anti-Semitic literature. I'm not talking about anti-Israel stuff, put out all the sons and daughters of Arab politicians lived in the embassies around there, and they paid to get a place in the universities, and they were just flooding it with all this stuff. Anyway, I got involved in that sort of political side of things. By the time I finished university, I just wanted to go and live in Israel. Not so much for religious reasons and that sort of stuff, but I just thought I saw a real necessity. So to cut a long story short, I did. Didn't get a very good degree, but I managed to just finish college. And I went, the day after my last exam, I went to live in Israel. And consequently spent the next 6 years there, more or less. And in the first few years, I got into sort of, various different scenes, one might say, right? I remember LSD was just about known then. And I tried LSD during that time, and also something called DMT. And I guess I spent about 2 or 3 years as a sort of freak, one might say, or a hippie, or I don't know what it'd be called today, you know. But certainly had a vast change came over me, one way or another, you know.
Go on.
Yeah, you ask.
Sorry. Yeah, no, just interested to know, was the hippie scene very big in Israel? Because it's hard to imagine that it would have been anywhere near like the size it was over here, or even more in America.
Well, maybe it's wrong to call it the hippie scene. For instance, my introduction, say, to smoking something like hash, which a lot of people did then, probably still do, was mainly through the local Arabs that I became friends with, and used to smoke it in their houses and in water pipes. It's different to the hippie culture, or what was hippie culture when I came back to England. But there was also the Western influence there, Americans and English and people, and you had the hippie scene as well. Or the flower power scene, I think would be a fairer sort of... fairer sort of definition. And I sort of oscillated between, socially in Israel, after I got my head together, right, I had a really bad time for a year, and I got really depressed, and just decided to pick myself up. And as soon as I made that decision, I did, and I went to live in Jerusalem. But so I held a job, did all sorts of, in inverted commas, normal things, really enjoyed it. But could still have very strong connections with my flower power lifestyle, you know, and found that we're both equally maintainable. So, I mean, that's where, in a sense, the next song comes from. I was trying to encapsulate all those years, and so much music came out during those years. You know what I mean? You're talking about 67 to 72, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny, as I speak, I just have to give this a mention since we're talking about period. I was in a war as well. I was in the Israeli army in 73, and I don't know. I don't even know what to say about it. It's just an event that took place. I guess loads of things have really influenced my life. But anyway, this is one of the songs I've chosen. I've chosen two, actually. But this is one of the songs I've taken to remember that era and the beautiful things and the spirit we were in and the spirit we want to live by. That's why I've chosen this particular song.
Spirit.
Thanks.
Yeah. Spirit, give a life, take a life.
Yeah. It's your job, you're not paid to feel. You seem confused by your own ideas. Life and death is what you're saying. And if I speak, am I betraying?
Shed. Do like Spirit.
Do you remember them, that song?
Yeah, very much so. I remember that. And it was weird because after the 60s, I kind of forgot them a bit and I got back into them again over the last couple of years. And there was a track called Ice by them that I nearly put on the show last week. It's just something really, really nice and still sounds very contemporary, whereas a lot of the stuff from them sounds a bit dated.
Yeah, well, anyway, I couldn't let that period go by without choosing something from Jefferson Airplane, who just had such a strong. I mean, we just loved it. You know, we just went tripping with them for forever. You know, it seemed, and so I just chose the first one that came to mind, and it's Lover.
Lover was 30 years old today. They took away all of his toys. His mother sent newspaper clippings to him about his old friends who stopped being boys. There was Halsey Green, just turned 33. His leather chair waits at the bank. And Sergeant Dow Jones, 27 years old, commanding his very own tank. But Lather still finds it a nice thing to do, to lie about nude in the sand, drawing pictures. faces of mountains that look like bumps, and thrashing the air with his hands. But wait, whole lather's productive, you know. He produces the finest of sound, putting drumsticks on either side of his nose, snorting the best licks in town. But that's all over. Lather was 30 years old today, and lather came foam from his tongue. He looked at me, eyes wide, and plainly say, "Is it true that I'm no longer young,
Mommy?"
And the children call him famous, what the old men call him fame. And sometimes he's so nameless that he hardly knows what game to play, which words to say. And I should have told him, "No, you're not old," and I should have let him go.
I don't know what you're trying to do, give me acid flashbacks or what there, blimey.
Yeah, it's a nice song, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. So, would it be fair to say that that period, I mean, you've chosen two tracks from a very close period in time there.
Right.
Would that be fair to say that period had quite a deep effect on your life?
Yeah, because we're really talking about 69 to 72, that's all the music that came out during that time, and a bit of 73, yeah. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And the next track, Handyman by James Taylor, again, I don't know this track either, although I obviously know James Taylor, so could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, just incidentally, Handyman was originally done by Del Shannon and in a much faster tempo.
Right, okay.
That's only by the way.
Right.
Now, the Jefferson Aeroplane, really, as I said, goes up to about 73. 74, that I got knowledge, right? And I was thinking when I was doing all this, how can I encapsulate my years, if you like, living amongst premise, you know, because I lived amongst premise for years. I lived in the ashram, and although I was thrown out the ashram, I certainly didn't come out of the cult. Until the late 90s, you know, I just held the belief and lived that way in myself all those years. And basically, I didn't listen to any music from really when I became a prammy, certainly till only recently, you know, in a meaningful way. I can't remember anything. But one of the songs that I do remember is this one, Handyman by James Taylor. And why do I remember it? Because I used to live in this ashram in Stockwell in London. A very wonderful year there in about 1977. I lived with a really nice group of people. And for me, at least for a while, it was what all I believed an ashram would be, you know, in terms of sort of the feelings and what actually happened there. It was really nice. That's how it seemed. And I remember one day we occasionally used to get like honoured guests, you know, like Pams. I remember Michael Detmer's coming once, and anyway, somebody came one. I can't remember who it was. I think it was someone who'd been Mirage's driver. I can't quite remember. He didn't actually live at the house, but he was an important person, right? Somebody like Mike Woods or somebody like that. And we got up as our usual to sing Artie at 6 o'clock. And then because he'd come straight from the Lord, He came into Artie and played us a song, and this was the song he played. Now, this song actually doesn't remind me of Mirage, in case anyone's thinking he's gone a bit nuts. Mm. It reminds me of what it felt like to live in that house with those people. And one of them, I made a baby with, who's now an adult. And certainly, if you ask me if anything good came out of those years, here's the proof. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's called Handyman by James Taylor. Enjoy.
Definitely the 70s, and well, it's good to know you've got one memory of music. I personally found that a really sad statement that you just made, and looking at your list as well, is that you've got all the tracks that came up from the 50s through to the 70s, then the last three are from, what, 91, 92 onwards. That is a huge gap with no music in your life, and I just find that really sad, and especially knowing what, you know, how you are about music.
Well, actually, I never listened to any of the, coming to the last three, I never listened to any of this stuff until about 1997. Even though you faithfully sent me music all during the years, and you ranted and talked on and blathered on about music all the years I've known you, but it just went in one ear and out the other, you know. By 97, I was like a... I was bored with myself. There's nothing there anymore, you know. I just felt quite dead, actually. wasn't a good time, I suppose, in one sense. But I just felt at some point I had to recommit myself to being alive.
Mm, indeed.
I found it really hard leaving Meraji. I'm talking about inside.
Yeah.
It's taken me years to unravel and to see how much was that fed into. I mean, I must have been crazy. We just used to listen to satsang every night, every weekend, read nothing but satsang year in, year out. And not so much that. I mean, I actually probably would have just drifted away and disappeared, you know. But it's when all the lies and the revisionism started, that really freaked me out, I guess. When I'm just hearing my own history told in another way, this complete denial, this complete sort of antithesis of what a perfect master is meant to bring, meant to give. We're just meant to swallow it, you know, just totally. I suppose I'm still not recovered, but I could have got in so far, you know, in my own self.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess I'm still going through that process, you know. I'm also aware of a huge gap, if you like, in my adult development. Some areas, it's difficult. Life is difficult. I don't say everything's fantastic, but from the angle that the premise I would have known would have looked at it, it's a difficult shift. It's a difficult shift. It's difficult to admit something you were so sure about, and I was just 3,000% sure, you know, that you could actually be so wrong.
I can really relate to that in a way. I mean, certainly during the period when I left, the greatest difficulty I had was just accepting, and that was where I was, which I realise now was just way outside of it all compared to a lot of people. Just exactly, you just completely doubt your own judgement on fundamental stuff. And that's quite scary, because that almost brings it down to everything every day.
I agree. I couldn't agree with you more. I used to listen to him a lot, right, and hang on to his words for ideas, you know.
Yeah.
Everything was focused on him. How he can deny that he made himself the focus, and how premised today the can die. I mean, I don't mind if people want to follow Murari, but why lie? Why lie? That's what made us better, I think, in those days. We thought we were telling the truth.
Yeah. You
know? And now there are people around who are living a lie. You know, I just don't know. I haven't left my original ideals.
Would you say then this is why you still carry on after all these years on the forums, just to confront that revisionism and stuff out of a sense of honour or duty or something? Or
also, it's been a valid part of my life. I still go on Middle Eastern forums as an Israeli or a whatever, and I get into all the stuff with them as well, and
right.
Various other areas in my life. You know, there are no Frankie Valli forums, unfortunately.
I've
been deserted.
I can't imagine why. Sorry about that.
I'm into loads of many different things. I managed to restore quite a few things from my youth, if you like.
Right.
Or before knowledge, if you like.
Yeah.
You know, before that, you know. Some relationships couldn't be restored, you know, and many things got broken. I'm not going to pretend they're ever not going to be broken.
No.
Damage is damage. But I think I'm recommitting to my own life, to life, if you like, as I once committed to Meraji. You know, that was the misdirection.
I must admit, from the outside, and having known you for 30 years, and seen the way that you've opened out and blossomed and grown in the last 8 or 9 years, it's just been really, it's been really nice on a personal level to see it. It's been quite inspiring, and, well, enough said really, I think that sort of covers it.
Okay, so can we now come ahead to post-1997?
Indeed.
Okay, so we make a little jump here. And I should say during that period I had a short, a 10-year career as a college lecturer, kind of further and higher education. I won't go into too much detail, but basically they sacked me, and I had a 4-year court case, and I won my court case, and I'm cured, and and whatever. There was a whole lot of crap going on. I didn't want to go on with what I perceived as corruption in British education. So I spoke to a newspaper, and I was accused of, what's the word? Blowing the whistle.
Right.
Anyway, it's all been proved true since everyone, it's about standard, no big deal. Anyway, I had 10, apart from all that, I had 10 years as a lecturer, which I found fairly interesting because after having no ashram and no more satsang, I used to like give satsang almost every night. I needed it. And now I wasn't allowed to talk about knowledge. So I thought I'd talk about something else I knew about. It was computing, because I've been working, I'd always, you know, I was a programmer. And I walked into a college, and basically they took me on. So anyway, I had a career which was had its own which deserves sort of a program on its own if anyone's interested. But so anyway, I finished there, and thought I'd go back to being a computer contractor, which I was actually in the '70s. I used to send all my money to Miraji every week, all my ashram's money anyway. So. Forgot what I was talking
about. We were up to the '90s and lecturing. That's a DMT, mate. I reckon.
Well, funnily enough, I've got to tell you, Anna, that's the mother of my daughter. She mentioned to me once, this was about early '90s. She'd read this article. Said, "Did you ever take DMT in your life?" I said, yeah, in 1972, whatever it was, 79, we fermented it onto fee leaves and tea leaves in Jerusalem and smoked it. And she said, oh, because I've just read this article that describes the symptoms, the damage it does to somebody's head. Okay. He picked it up. Whatever that, I mean, damage.
Yeah, yeah.
Breathing is damaging these days.
Yeah. Well, absolutely everything is. There's a risk factor associated with everything, isn't it?
Yeah. By who owns the breath. Oh, oops, I didn't say that right. Where were we?
We're up to a man called Adam, an Easter song.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So anyway, I tried to go back into computer contracting, and I got offered a fantastic job. I was offered $35,000 to work for a certain large bank. And I took the job, and after 2 months, I just couldn't do it anymore. I just couldn't focus, I just couldn't concentrate, I couldn't actually program anymore. You know, I felt like I was all totally burnt out. And I don't know, I looked at myself, I mean, and I just felt like I had no more purpose in doing some DJing to make some mixes of what I like. So you'll be able to see what that is. And so I just chose a couple of songs, but the first one actually the song between me and Izzy, my wife, right, who we met at the first night I met Raimi.
Yes.
And basically we've been together ever since, you know, and indeed and got married. This was our first, this is my Hello Stranger with Izzy, my wife. Enjoy. bringing me back to life.
Very important for me in my life. I didn't know that you and Izzy had that thing going around that track. But and just to sort of take over for a second, the thing about A Man Called Adam, that they were one of the first bands that I saw in 1990 on a video that I just really understood, especially where Sally Rogers, the lead singer's coming from. And seen them quite a few times over the years, and if anybody gets a chance to see them live, there's something else. She is just a fucking wicked human being, and was exactly the kind of vibe that I needed to get away from it all, and obviously I would think from what you've just said, similar for you as well.
Yeah, absolutely right on the ball for me, you know, just very etheric song, very etheric, very, very, very floaty, very nice, just very... It's full of love, I don't know.
Yeah, well, and that's it. That's the whole thing about that stuff. It's full of love.
Yeah. That actually brings me to the next one. It's Banco de Gaia. It's called I Love Baby Cheesy. No idea why it's called that. It has no relation to what's in it. For me, this simply represents the joy of dancing, the joy of the dance. You know, it was really a new discovery for me. And this song just... does it for me. Let's have it. We'll be right back.
we'd be without the dance floor, the pair of us, eh?
Yeah. Excellent form of everything, really.
Indeed.
Funnily enough, I went to someone's house for tea the other day, and I met someone there. We knew each other, but we'd never spoken off the dance floor.
Yeah.
I've had those dance floor conversations.
It's quite amazing
meeting them in the flesh.
Yeah, you do it. I think that's one of the things that I found quite so revolutionary, that you can have just such wicked contact with somebody in the moment, and that's it. It itself is fine. There's no other agenda. There's nothing. It's just a moment, pure and simple, and where you're coming from.
Hey man, we should start a cult.
I think we've done that one. We're not starting a cult.
Ourselves, but flower power. Huh?
Yeah. So I'm assuming that the next one by Spongle, and thanks to you, because I never heard of them before, you and Izzy.
Spongle is actually the creator of the real creator of the universe.
Right.
Spongle is the one, the entity that everyone should really be singing arti to. Spongle is the true Guru Maharaji. That's all I can say. And if you haven't heard Spongle, look him up.
Yeah, you know that. Yeah. I've heard even a couple of DJs out recently who don't, well, Morris has played two of their tracks in the last couple of months. Really nice ones. So definitely, think you're spot on with that.
Yeah. Can we hear them now?
Indeed. Let's go into Spongle, Once Upon the Sea of Blissful Awareness. I wonder what that can mean.
See your
was very nice. Just lovely chill out track, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. They've made about 3 CDs and various remix type things as well. But nice, nice. Especially if you like trance. But they're well worshipped, they are.
Yeah, yeah.
Two little geezers, I met them.
You know it.
Nice.
So, as usual, we should have done it last week, but we didn't. Out of those tracks, which was the one that you would take? And I know I'm throwing this on you because we haven't discussed it. You've got to pick one of them.
It would have to be A Man Called Adam.
Yeah.
It's all about a new beginning for me.
Yeah.
It would have to be A Man Called Adam. That really encapsulates everything else anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. You How's know. That?
No, I can relate to that big time. Big, absolutely big time. All right, well, we've done the track, so now we go on to book. What book would you like to have with you?
Well, I had a long think about this, because I haven't read that many books, being sort of dyslexic, as far as reading is concerned. But in my youth, in fact, until quite recently, I had a real large collection of Superman comics. And when I went to live in Israel, my mother dumped them, you know, sadly. But there was one comic in particular, and this was called World's Finest. It was one of the series in the DC where Superman and Batman appeared together. And the story was this. It was a 3-part story. And the story was this. Batman and Robin give to Superman this question for his supercomputer. And the question is, what would Superman's life on Krypton have been like had Krypton not blown up? And the computer goes to simulate, and the whole book, or the short comic, if you like, is about that story. And I've never been able to retrieve that comic. So if I could take that with me, I would be quite happy, because by the time I got to the end, I would have forgotten the beginning, and I can read it again anyway. So that would be the book.
That sounds like a good one. And I think if anybody's listening to this and has got a copy, I think without a saying, Jed might be rather grateful. Yeah. I'm sure price could be negotiated.
Grand, they could get several grand for it.
Yeah. Well, look,
have
we're
to
with
really
it.
Like me.
And luxury item?
You know, I totally forgot about that. A luxury item. Probably a neck rest. Oh, mind, I could use a stone, couldn't I?
Indeed, you could. Or you could build something out of it. I'm sure there's got to be a couple of trees that you could build something from there.
Okay. So something that even from the civilized world, as one says. what would I take with me? There's no electricity.
But you can have something that's got a solar generator built in, as I did last week with my laptop.
Take with a solar generated toast and cheese sandwich maker.
Right, okay.
I reckon I could get the bread. I could do, you know, hopefully.
You maybe could make some bread up out of something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Could milk a cow.
I don't know if we've got any cows there.
Anyway, that's what I'd take.
All right, cool. Well, Jeffro, thanks for coming in on this week's show.
Okay,
and slightly less techie problems this week, hopefully, so this will go out in a lot better nick. We've basically finishing the programme there, but would say that we've had a couple of people showing interest, not ex-premiers. So I think occasionally what we're going to be doing is we're going to be having just random guests on if there's no ex-premiers available to want to do it. And on those weeks there's no random guests, me and Jed will be just doing a smashy and nicey back-to-back session with a little bit of a natter in between. So, hope you enjoy, and it will be available download, links will be sent out. So, catch you all later. In a minute, when I go live. Bye!